we have a saying in Brazil that we say that Brazilian is not for amateurs. We usually say that because of the bureaucracy and all the things that you have to go through as an entrepreneur. But I think it's at the same time a kind of competitive barrier for those who are willing to do that.
Welcome to the SaaS Revolution Show, a podcast that brings you insights and tactics from the greatest SaaS minds across the world. The show is brought to you by SaaSDoc, the conference to turn your SaaS up to 11, returning to Dublin in October 15th to the 17th, 2018. I'm your host, Alex Suma, and on this episode of the show, I talk with Eric Santos, co-founder and CEO of Brazilian marketing automation company Resultados Digitais, which he started in 2011 when no one in Brazil knew or believed in online marketing. Eric and his co-founders pushed through to educate the entire market, and the company currently has over 10,000 customers and a channel program with over 1,500 agencies. I first met Eric at SaaSDoc 17, where I learned more about his business and the Brazilian SaaS market. Recently, I had the pleasure to speak at RD Summit in Florianopolis, Brazil, a conference run by Eric's company that gathered 8,000 digital marketers from across Latin America. Certainly the biggest event of its kind in LATAM. Sujan Patel rightfully described it as having the Disneyland effect. Stick around to hear what steps Eric took to excite the audience that didn't believe in marketing automation and how that created a movement.
Something that we call internally Mechanical Turk experiment. We would try to sell the product, but without even having one line of code yet written.
What is the bar to make a user conference successful?
So we don't have that kind of conference where, you know, especially the big shots, they come in, They get their gigs, and then they, you know, just get out and fly back.
How he built the channel of partners.
The value proposition that we sell to those partners is that they can sell high quality recurring revenue services on top of our software.
Now on with the show. Welcome to the show, Eric Santos, CEO of Resultados Digitais.
Thanks, Alex. Pleasure to be here.
Well, it's good to see you again. I saw you a couple of weeks ago in Brazil, in sunny Florianopolis. I guess that's where you are today.
Yeah, exactly. It's pretty sunny today here.
Okay, very good. It's pretty rainy and very cold in the UK right now. But Eric, yeah, you know, super excited to have you on the show. Now, as I mentioned, you're the CEO of Resultados Digitais. Perhaps I'll, if it's okay with you, I'll call you RD for short.
Sure.
Tell the audience a little bit about yourself. You know, who is Eric Santos?
All right. So I've been a tech entrepreneur for the last 15 years. So my first company was in the mobile space. So I'm engineer by formation, and after I left college, I started my first company. Sold it a few 6 years later. So started RD in 2011. So we actually launched the product the following year, 2012. And we have a marketing automation platform for SMBs. Mm-hmm. That was initially focused on Brazil only, but now we're expanding to other markets too. So our platform is called RD Station. Mm-hmm. It's basically a marketing automation platform with landing pages, email marketing, SEO, lead nurturing, analytics, all that kind of stuff that you usually find in a marketing automation platform. I've been I'm the co-founder and CEO of the company. So right now we are at about 600 employees. Mm-hmm. We just crossed the 10,000 customers mark.
Congrats. So
pretty happy about the those years that have passed and the following years too.
Well, so what drove you to, you know, create this create RD back in 2011? You know, what got you excited about, you know, digital or marketing?
I think that goes back to my previous company, because I was trying to reach my potential customers there, or clients. So we used to sell mobile projects to brands in Brazil through their agencies. And at that time, that was like 2006, 2007. So that was even before the iPhone came out. So nobody actually knew how to, you know, use mobile in their, you know, marketing strategies. So we wanted to not only evangelize the market, kind of educate the market, but also make sure that we were seen as an authority in this domain. So that was, you know, out of, I would say that naivete, we started creating content around the topic. And then that's how I kind of bumped into this concept of online marketing, inbound marketing. And then that was about the time where most of the leading companies in US in our space got started too, 2007, 2008. So I started learning from them too. And I was actually feeling the pain because I had to use a bunch of different tools to kind of do online marketing well, and had to allocate precious development resource to do that. So the value proposition of having an integrated platform really resonated with me at first. And then when I saw that there was an opportunity here in Brazil that nobody was doing anything, and there were some very different situations in terms of customer maturity, you know, level of service expected. So I thought it was a good idea, so decided to start in 2011.
Well, it sounds like it was a good idea now that you have 10,000 customers. So I think you proved that there was the need for it. But I guess back in 2011, when you're bringing the concept of, you know, marketing automation and, you know, content marketing to Brazil, I guess it was a very different picture sort of, you know, back then making those kind of first sales. Like, you know, did the SMBs, you know, believe in what you were trying to sell them and believe in marketing automation? You know, how was it, you know, how have you managed to reach 10,000, you know, over the years?
Yeah, you are absolutely right. And I think we had to eat our own dog food for a long time. Well, we still do, basically. So we had to basically educate the market first. And 5-6 years ago in Brazil, we had a situation where most of the companies and most of the people running those companies, they didn't even know that online marketing was something that they could do to grow their business. Mm-hmm. So we kind of had to sell the concept first, and then we would sell the opportunity of having a solution to help them do that. So most of our educational initiatives in the beginning weren't around our company or the product, were basically around the subject, about the opportunities and the benefits that they could have if they did well online marketing. So that's a main tenet of our content marketing initiatives still to this day. Mm-hmm. But of course, over time, the market matured a little bit, and then we were able to, get into more sophisticated discussions and also introduce the product in many different ways along the way.
And sort of like in the first year, let's have a look at the first year, you know, how long was it until you got, you know, I guess, initial traction to the point, and then till you found product market fit? What was the kind of time scales there?
Sure. So we did three things in the beginning in parallel. The first one was, you know, education. So mm-hmm. we started creating content and doing speaking gigs and that kind of stuff. So that was really important, because when we launched the product about a year later, we already had 10,000 leads in our database. So that was the kind of the initial set of potential customers that we had, mm-hmm. and they were already consuming our content. So the second thing we did was customer discovery and customer development. And that was important because I felt really strong about the, you know, the demand in general, but I didn't know exactly what kind of product and what kind of level of service those customers would need here in Brazil. So we actually did for the first, you know, 18 months, we did something that we call internally Mechanical Turk experiment. So we would try to sell the product but without even having one line of code yet written. And we did it ourselves. So let's say that a client would want to use a landing page creator someday. Mm-hmm. We would just create the landing page for them. They will send us the text and the images. We would just create the landing page ourselves and then, you know, publish to them. So that was the customer discovery phase. So we kind of fine-tuned the roadmap a little bit, and we felt exactly what kind of, you know, features and also the messaging that would resonate better with potential customers. And the third thing was the product development itself. So since we have such a broad platform, it takes some time to get something like meaningful on the street. So that's why we only launched the product a few 18 months after starting the company. So the official launch was in August of 2012. So about 18 months after we started.
And when did you decide to raise venture capital, and what was the reason sort of behind that? And I guess the third part to that, I understood it took some time yeah. You know, as well. Can you just give us a little bit of insight around that fundraise?
Sure. I think, well, we were lucky that we could bootstrap the company for the first couple of years. I had some money for my previous venture, but I think the main idea was not only that, but actually making sure that we had product market fit, because the last thing that I wanted at that time was to kind of raise money and then have nothing to scale on. So for the first couple of years, we bootstrapped the business, and then I raised an angel round by the end of 2012. And then the idea at that time was to find a repeatable model. So we were doing inbound marketing, generating leads. So I wanted to make sure that we could close deals out of those leads, and then we could also serve those customers mostly online. So that was the kind of the predictable machine that we were building at that time. Mm-hmm. And when we felt that we had something going on there, we felt ready for our first kind of institutional round. So I started fundraising basically in the middle of 2013, so about 6 months in after the angel round. And we eventually raised Series A from one local VC here called DGF. They're a firm specialized in SaaS companies here in Brazil.
Okay, very cool. And you mentioned this building the predictable machine, yeah. As a core component. But I think something that you've also been doing is building and creating a movement, across Latin America. And what do you think, are the core components of building a movement? Why have you decided to, you know, be the catalyst of building this movement?
Sure. Well, I think part of the decision was based on the benchmarking from what we were seeing from the leading companies in the U.S. in different categories. So, back to Salesforce or even in our space or many other space, like the leading companies, they rally a movement around the topic or the industry that they're inserted. So that was the initial idea, but what we figured out along the way was that there was a lot of people that were already working on the topic or especially in our, I can get to that later, but we have a partner program with marketing agencies. So there are a lot of marketing agencies already working in digital marketing. But they didn't have the forum to, discuss, debate, learn. So pretty quickly, we figured out that we could not only being perceived as an authority by kind of writing great content, doing webinars, that kind of stuff, but also throwing events, throwing conference, that we could gather the community and gather specialists and people who know what they're doing. They're, they either have a lot of experience in the subject or are doing and learning along the way inside their own companies. So that's why in 2013, we decided to start our first event, which was the first version of RD Summit that you participated in. Back then, we only had 250 people at the conference. Mm-hmm. It was pretty rough in terms of production and everything else. But it was a good seed that we planted early on. And then that has been a key component of our, I think, our kind of authority and community building for the last few years.
And so you mentioned RD Summit and this event, you know, being as like a cornerstone of this movement that you've been building. And so 250 people in 2013, how many were there this year?
8,000 people.
8,000. So pretty sizable. I think I mentioned to you, like, you know, when I came to Florianopolis and participated at RD Summit, I was, I don't know, just like very surprised at the scale and just the level of production. It was, a pretty amazing event. I think Sujan Patel sort of mentioned, you know, it has the Disneyland effect, and it definitely has that wow effect. Congrats on that. I guess at a conference of that scale, and I guess the level of production that you've put into it, we're probably talking, you know, sort of like huge budgets there, perhaps close to the revenue, annual revenue of the company, or similar, right? But these are I think generally not-for-profit events. It's more, you know, it's acting as this kind of marketing education funnel for digital marketing, not only just for RD Summit, right? So you're educating the whole sort of industry in Latin America.
Yeah, exactly. Well, thanks for the comment. And I think something that I usually talk to other companies here in the SaaS space too, it's something that, of course, it is a big budget and it is a distraction too. So, we get a lot. We get involved with many things about the events. But at the same time, it pays off really well, not only in terms of brand building, recognition, but also I would say that if it were only for the fact that it calls on the employees here, I would do it, in a heartbeat. Mm-hmm. No questions about that. So financial wise, I think that the event basically breaks even. We mm-hmm. lose a little bit of money, but it's not that meaningful. So it's kind of, if I don't consider the energy that we put in the event, it's like a free marketing for us, basically. Yep. And as I mentioned, I think it is really important for employees too. So we, besides RD Summit, which is our biggest conference in Florianopolis, usually in held in October or November, we also have another project that we call RD on the Road, which we go to different capitals in Brazil. And now next year, we're going also to Mexico City in Bogota and Latin America, probably in Portugal too. We're trying to figure out yet. The idea is to, very similar spirit, but smaller events where we can be closer to our customers and partners in many regions in Brazil and Latin America.
Many SaaS companies I've seen, they try and do their own sort of user conferences, or at some point where when they have enough customers. I think you've obviously, RD have been super successful in scaling it to 8,000 in a very short time. Can you distill down to like what are the maybe the core elements of creating a successful user conference? Are there a couple of things that our listeners, perhaps who are thinking about creating a user conference should be mindful of?
Sure. I think the main component is not to make the conference about the company or the product. Mm-hmm. So it's all about the content and the community. And it's a trap that I've seen some other companies fall into. So we, of course, we since we have the space, and usually it's my keynote speech, I do talk a little bit about, you know, our launches and strategy, but that's even like 20-minute thing, even in my presentation. So we try not to have anyone that's going to sell their products on stage. So we call this word here in Brazil, Jabá, which is when you go to, you know, to a conference and they speak about your company rather than the you know, any particular useful content. So, and the bar that we have for our speakers here is that, and I think that we achieve success when we reach that, is that when you have a speaker finishing their presentation and then just sitting to watch the next speaker. So we don't have that kind of conference where, you know, especially the big shots, they come in, they get their gigs, and then they, you know, just get out and fly back to their places. So most of the people here, even the international guys like you or Jaco or and Hanley, they stuck around for 3 days here. So that's the kind of bar that we have for in terms of content. And the other thing, I think it's it comes down to experience too. So Sujan mentioned the Disneyland effect. That's something that we're pretty fortunate, but at the same time, it's something that we did by design, which is we don't hire anyone else to work at the conference. Only our employees work at the conference, except for, of course, like some maintenance and cleaning activities. Doesn't make sense, but even the people who are handing out translation headsets, they're are the employees. So we try to bring the experience, you know, a Disneyland experience to the attendees as well, so that they feel happy when they're there, even if something goes wrong, which always do. You run conference, you know how it is. But the idea that they have, they learned a lot, they connect, and they had a good experience there. It's kind of the basis for having them coming back next year and spreading the word too. So that's why I think that we grew from 250 to 8,000 attendees in 4 years. And I think that that's a piece of advice that I'll give to other SaaS entrepreneurs.
You mentioned earlier just around sort of, you know, partner agencies and, you know, this being a strategy for you and, you know, for your growth. How many partners do you work with? How do you go about recruiting them? Is there anything, you know, other SaaS, you know, founders can learn from your experience there?
Sure. Yeah, I think that... And it's kind of contrarian, because usually when you read about a topic, people say that you shouldn't worry about establishing a channel program or a partner program before you have like 10 million AR. I don't agree with that, and I think it's our case. So just to give you a background, today we have 1,500 partners, which are basically marketing agencies. And they bring us about 50% of our sales each month. So that program, the importance is growing over time. So that program started really small in 2013, and then it's growing ever since. And the way that we capture those partners now, the way that we attract them, is basically through our inbound marketing activities too. So at first they were drawn by the content that we created around online marketing, but now we also have another blog and another set of materials that we create specifically for them. So how to be a better marketing agency, how to, you know, set the prices for a service, how to onboard new customers, that kind of thing that we discuss in this second blog. So that's our main channel for acquiring and educating our partners. And then after they join the program, we work with them to make sure that they can sell our solution and their services to their customers, and also proper onboard and serve them after that. And I think the main thing that we learned along the way, even though we give them a commission on the subscription, it's not something that's meaningful or will move the needle for them. The value proposition that we sell to those partners is that they can sell high quality recurring revenue services on top of our software. So the commissions, it's usually less than 10% of the services revenue that they can get out of the partnership. Mm-hmm. So it's not meaningful, as I mentioned, and it's something that we hear a lot from them. But if you can find a partner that with your specific solution can, you know, up their game and sell different kind of services, especially, you know, regarding the marketing agencies, they're used to having, you know, just one-off projects, not very much predictability, that kind of thing. So we kind of solved the problem for them. So now they can sell different types of services and can, they can prove ROI to their clients with our software. So that's a much more propelling argument for them to join the program and do the investment that they need to do on their end.
Very cool. I mean, congrats, 1,500 partners, you know, 50% of the sales. It's good achievement there. And now we're coming to the end of the show. So I've just got a couple of questions for you. Now, as far as I know, RD are the biggest marketing automation, SaaS company in Latin America. And you predominantly focus in Latin America sort of right now. I mean, it's a huge market, right? So that's pretty cool. Have you got plans to go beyond and to really, you know, bring this across the globe? Or are you comfortable with the hundreds of millions of people that are in LATAM?
We do have plans. So, but that's not to say that we're running out of room to grow here in Brazil. Mm-hmm. Just to give an idea, we have 10,000 customers now, and we think the addressable market here in Brazil is probably around 1 million companies. So, but the thing is that we were totally focused in Brazil for the first few years. And even with the product and the content only in Portuguese, we started seeing some demand from other markets too. So initially, you know, from companies in Portugal, which is of course you can get that easier, but also from companies in Latin America, as I mentioned, and some weird places like Egypt. When we had, I remember this guy that used to use the software with Google Chrome Translate extension there. So like translating the software in real time there. So we thought that there might be something there. And then we started working, discovering the opportunity last year. And this year we decided to invest a lot more on an international part of the business. So we translated everything into Spanish. We also started a blog in Spanish that's getting some traction now. We also, right now we're starting to translate everything into English too. And the idea is to, we feel that in most markets, the SMBs are underserved. And most companies, especially the leading companies in the space, they're not paying attention to that. And I totally get that because, you know, it's really hard to sell to SMBs in those markets. You have to have a simpler solution. We have to have a different go-to-market strategy. You have to have a partner program that can help you do the last mile in terms of service because they expect that. So that's something that I think we cracked the code here in Brazil, and most of the elements of this model are replicable in other markets too. So we, as I mentioned, we started with Latin America and Portugal first. Right, 2018, we're planning to expand to other markets too, other emerging markets preferably. And the... it's still small compared to the operation in Brazil, but we're growing faster in Latin America than what we did in Brazil in the beginning. So we're pretty bullish about the strategy. besides that, I think the challenge for me is to keep scaling the company, keep improving efficiency and working on bottlenecks, bringing leaders to different parts of the company, scaling the team internally. So that's a lot of challenges that come with, you know, this phase of the company, basically in terms of scaling the operation internally.
And so you've just talked about your internationalization plans and, you know, taking RD beyond Latin America and into Europe. But I guess a final sort of thought on the state of SaaS in Brazil. And so obviously when, you know, when we were at RD Summit a few weeks ago, we had, or you had, you know, Mikael from Zendesk, you know, as one of the speakers, and Zendesk, you know, looking at, you know, Brazil, they're already active in Brazil as it's an important market for them. And I know, I think like Pipedrive, actually, I was speaking with them this week at Web Summit, and, you know, for them, Brazil is an important market. Beyond that, I don't know how many, let's say, these international, you know, scaling SaaS companies are active in Brazil. But can you give us some insights, you know, into that and the state of SaaS in Brazil?
Sure. Well, I absolutely agree that the market's big here, and it's got a big opportunity for companies everywhere in the world. But at the same time, it's pretty hard to do business here in Brazil, to open up, you know, an office, or, you know, even do the basic stuff here. So most of the companies that I see, and I think that Zendesk is an exception, they try to kind of, you know, try without the proper resource, and then they just give up after a while. So we have a saying in Brazil that we say that Brazilian is not for amateurs. We usually say that because of the bureaucracy and all the things that you have to go through as an entrepreneur. But I think it's at the same time a kind of competitive barrier for those who are willing to do that. And I think Zendesk and Pipedrive are two good cases of companies that have prioritized the market, have dedicated resource for the region. In the case of Zendesk, they have an office here. They have, you know, full-time employees here in Brazil. And I think some other companies have that too. In the SaaS space, not so much, but, you know, all the other leading companies like Google, Facebook, they all have big offices here in Brazil too. And I think it is an opportunity. And regarding the Brazilian SaaS companies, I think we're seeing a good wave of great companies that are starting to get to those, you know, the 10 million, 20 million mark in ARR, when it's starting to go abroad too. Mm-hmm. So we're going to see, my guess is that we're going to see more and more Brazilian companies, you know, get into the radar of, you know, the SaaS VCs and the ecosystem in general in other markets too, either in the US or, you know, Europe, as you guys are based. So I'm pretty confident that we'll see a lot more buzz about the Brazilian SaaS companies in the next few years. Because we see a lot of companies, and the problem is, and just final thing on this, I think it's both a blessing and a curse that we have such a big market that usually at first the companies they focus on Brazil only. Mm-hmm. And that that comes with a price later on when they want to go abroad. So we definitely, you know, it's our case for sure. We're having to, you know, rebuild some things, you know, rethink some things in terms of structure, you know, even, you know, the employee base, to make sure that we can go abroad. It's different from a company like Pipedrive, for instance, that, you know, starts in Estonia, and then, you know, they have to go abroad from the get-go.
Yeah.
So I think that that's something that the Brazilian companies are starting to learn, to think more globally from day zero.
Awesome. Well, Eric, you've been a great guest on the show today. A pleasure to speak with you as always, and look forward to you know continuing to follow the journey of RD over the next couple of years, and see you at SaaStock 2018 as well. So yeah, thanks again for being on the show, and wish you all the best, and we will speak soon.
Thanks, Alex. It was my pleasure. Thank you.
Hope you've enjoyed this episode of the SaaS Revolution Show with Eric Santos and his powerful story of starting from scratch when no one understood what he was doing. Thanks for listening and for your continued support. If you enjoyed this episode and you enjoyed the SaaS Revolution Show, please take a couple of minutes and rate us and write a short review of the show on iTunes. It makes a huge difference and means the world to me. See you next time.